Hello, Spacers. From Austin, Texas, I'm Christopher Schmidt. On today's show, I'm joined by Lauren Golombeski. She's a product design director and co-founder of Voxable, which builds conversational bots and voice interfaces. Before we get started, some notes on where I'll be and some words from our sponsors. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at Telejet, T-E-L-E-J-E-C-T, where I try to be funny in spite of my many, many typos. I'll also be emceeing the SaaS Summit. It's a full-day virtual front-end UX design conference that you can attend anywhere online. All you need is a good internet connection, a modern browser, or an app. You can find more at saassummit.com. And if you can't attend full day, all the great presentations about responsive typography, building a design system, integrating animations into a living style guide, and all that great stuff that we're talking about, you'll definitely get free recordings when you register. So register now at saassummit.com. For the Non-Breaking Space show, you can set it and forget it so you never miss an episode with our newsletter. So whenever a new show comes out, you'll be notified right away via email. So sign up today at newsletter.nonbreakingspace.tv. As always, you can find show notes and links at nonbreakingspace.tv. So if we talk about it, you'll probably find it in our show notes at the website, nonbreakingspace.tv. And thank you for subscribing, commenting, liking, and telling others about the Non-Breaking Space show. Please keep your hands inside the moving vehicle at all times. On with the show. Well, welcome to the show. Just welcome for being here. And then I first heard, you're in Austin, Texas right now. So
yes.
I'm in Austin, Texas. I had not heard of you until I went to the Talk About conference. And your bot was mentioned, or was on the, I'm not sure you talked about the bot actually, because I had to deck away for some of the conference. But the bot that I saw I love the idea so much that I said, like, I have to go find out more about this bot, because it was so interesting in terms of culture and some of that too. But I also wanted to talk more about your background as well, because I found, like, because I did some research, like, wow, this is so great. First question I always ask is, like, how did you get into the web? Like, what was your first exposure to the web, and how did you get into building things for the web?
Yeah, so I went to school for graphic design, so notably not focused on the web specifically. I think then the idea of a web job was not as exciting as the job of, like, in a publication or in a packaging design or book design type of job. But that was, I think, more based on the focus of my professors. And out of school, I graduated in 2009. So it was like the peak of the financial crisis. And I was kind of unsure if I would get a job or where I would get a job. And I started looking from, like, right where I'm from, Pittsburgh, because I was like, you know, if anything, I can live with my parents, it's going to be easy for me to look for jobs. And I actually sent out just a bunch of different, like, portfolio pieces, like a little design out to several companies in Pittsburgh. One of them landed, and it happened to be a digital agency. So this digital agency was really my first introduction to the web, and it was called Sun King. And then they kind of morphed and split into a couple different agencies. And I stuck with the agency called This Is Red, which was kind of the one born out of there. But we focused on building digital products for companies, digital marketing products, a lot of animations and videos, and a lot of websites, microsites, like fun sites. We were still doing Flash back then. And Flash was still some of the stuff I had to was designing within, but it quickly moved in that time frame to, like, Web 2.0, and that's when web started getting really exciting. But there is where I met my first, like, mentors and colleagues that were really great designers in just the web space. They were really interested in user experience, which was kind of was less heard of then, having specific user experience roles or even a process that enveloped user experience. But the designers that were there became, like, really good friends, and We're still in contact today. And so there's still people who've kind of, I talk to a lot about industry things. But that was my introduction to the web. And I think I kind of grew to really loving it and really wanting more than working on digital marketing campaigns. And I wanted to build products or be at least a part of that that type of process. So I interviewed out of that position, I interviewed with Thinktiv, which is here, is a company that's based in Austin, Texas. And at the time they had a Pittsburgh office. One of their founders had moved to Pittsburgh and wanted to start tapping into the tech scene. And that was, they're a venture accelerator. So they build startup companies and they help startup companies build their first products, their second products, their, you know, kind of big growth opportunities. And so
they actually work with people who have the ideas to build the products, or is that it? Or are they hired to do it?
They work with CEOs. So it's kind of, it's an agency that a CEO or a CTO or a CMO, and even director level type people would hire Thinktiv to build out their product instead of building an internal product team. Or in addition to their in-house product team, they may want to build a new product or a new opportunity. And so they would hire a company that Thinktiv would give them like product design, user experience, and technology. And maybe, you know, not all of those things at once. And Thinktiv's model actually includes the idea of like a portfolio companies. So in companies that they're much closer with and much more part of the growth and evolution of, where they will sit on they'll have a board seat, or they will help with pitch decks and getting investment. And Thinktiv will actually split some of the service cost for equity. So they have several portfolio companies in Austin that have been successful as well.
Okay, cool. Awesome.
Yeah, so jumping there was really, like, jumping onto Thinktiv was what really got me most of my product design experience initially. And that was really great because a lot of the guys at Thinktiv went to Carnegie Mellon, and they actually worked in Austin for Trilogy, which a lot of people who've been in Austin for a while have heard of.
I have not.
It was a big tech company during the first .com boom. So it was successful, and it brought a lot of talent to Austin, and a lot of talent that has remained in Austin. So a lot of the founders and executives at Thinktiv are from Trilogy, or had some hand in being part of the Trilogy team.
Okay, and that first wave, like what year or years would that be?
Gosh, I don't even know. I'm thinking like late 90s, early 2000s.
Okay, cool. I just computers. Okay, cool.
But you know, so they have a lot of talent, and the founders were very design focused, user experience focused. So that was a big, they put design first in the company, which was really interesting because that was kind of one of my one of the things I had been frustrated about to that point was that technology wasn't technology design and website design wasn't necessarily putting design first, unless it was, you know, a marketing type of effort, but then you weren't getting really good technology on the back end. So it was like, it was a trade-off. It was like either you're doing something that's somewhat flashy, but maybe has a horrible user experience and doesn't have great engineers behind it. Or you're doing something that is pretty utilitarian, but they want to focus on good engineering, but they don't necessarily want to invest in design. And I think that was, you know, early in the web and the technologies involved evolution. And I had come from Pittsburgh, which being in Pittsburgh, there was a lot less focus on tech and tech design. The tech industry there is definitely ramping up and burgeoning and continues to do so.
Yes, definitely.
But but I hadn't really seen that view of Pittsburgh until I had until I had joined Thinktiv, really, until I saw people building products and wanting to and realizing that design was not just a nice to have, but it was right. a strategic decision that you were making. Mm-hmm. So that was really like my, and that's where I fell in love with user experience and actually thinking about how users thought and building out, you know, very structured paths for the user to experience a product. And really was my first introduction in dealing with products as opposed to just marketing websites, marcom websites. And so that's what, where I fell in love with the web.
Yeah. So when was the last time you've done a print project, if I might ask?
Oh, geez. Yeah. Well, actually for Voxable, when we were first starting, we were attending some conferences and, we made like a one sheet that we got from it. So yeah. I like a little one sheet handout that we could hand out to people that gave them a little bit more introduction into what we did. And I was so excited to actually, well, and business cards, there's always business cards when you end up working for companies. So, but actually going, actually while at Thinktiv, before that, we worked on a, company for a bit that had some consumer packaged goods as a part of their technology offering. And we, I got to actually like manage the print process of getting labels printed. And a lot of it's standardized and, especially when you're dealing with startups, you're unless the startup is directly focusing on revolutionizing a particular consumer packaged good, you're likely not designing new dyes, like die cuts and things like that. So you're picking from a catalog of, you know, somewhat standardized things, which was not my perception of it when I was in school. I thought everything was completely custom and wonderful, and that only exists if you have a very, very large budget or very high quantity.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I went to school for graphic design, and I have not, whenever there's a print project that rolls in here, like it's usually something that we're working on, like our t-shirts. So, or something like that. It was just like, we were like, there's a, between my partner and I, we have like, we scramble to get input in, like, cause it's like, oh, print. Like a physical product. Oh my gosh.
It's a little scarier because it's so final. Like going on, it feels a lot more intense. Right. Going press checks then and being like, okay, this is, if I have to make this decision and really only get to make it once or else I really have to pay for it. And that idea isn't, it's not gone. Like that, you don't lose that on the web, but the cost of changing things is so much smaller that feeling of anxiety doesn't quite hit the same way.
That's exactly the reason why I jumped to web from print, because I was just like, this is way back when dinosaurs ruled Earth, but that's when I jumped on the web, because I was just like, let me get this straight. If I screw up a blue sheet correction, I probably still have to eat the cost, but I can just make a typo correction and upload it to the server. Yeah. Like, okay, let me just let me go back and fix that. Right
and there. No one even has to notice. Like you can find that and change it. And your team or your client doesn't necessarily have to catch it. Like you can make all those changes without having to say, hey, we have to get this reprinted or remember those booklets that were delivered to you? Like there's a new shipment coming. I think that's why I think coming into the space in 2009, was like really shaped my view of the world, because being at the like point where like the economic downturn was happening, I think that's really when like designers at, you know, big publications and editorial design was like really dwindling at a high rate. And I think it was both because of the economic downturn as well as like how quickly things were changing at that time. Like Facebook had been around for several years at that point. And at that point, I think they had actually opened it up to more than just college students. And it was really growing and expanding. And I just saw that like most of the fun stuff was happening on the web, and that like really to get into kind of traditional design was going to be a harder game to play. I was going to have a lot more competition with people that had more experience. And so it was somewhat of an economic decision as well as, at least initially, that I thought it was just a more valuable market to be in.
Have you been to Pittsburgh lately? Have you seen the tech scene since then? You've been here in Austin for about 2 years now, is that right? Or
I've been in Austin for 4 years, okay, almost
so,
4 years.
So your website needs to be updated. I just want to know that.
so is the mine, perpetual by the way, but, issue with designers only update when you're looking for work. Yeah, I do need to better manage that. But
I'm putting the blame on you and not my research. That's what I'm trying to do. Sorry. Yeah,
absolutely. No, I've actually seen like a couple of things like my Skype profile and other things that I'm like, oh, there's too many touch points to almost manage that you're not constantly thinking of that right. aren't the high traffic ones
right.
that need updated. But I have been back to Pittsburgh. Almost my entire family lives there still. So I go back pretty frequently. I don't get to dive into like tech scene events as much, but I definitely still follow Twitter accounts and Facebook accounts of companies there. And the tech scene is definitely growing and maturing. So even in just in our space where we're working on conversational interfaces, there's a company in Pittsburgh called Conversant Labs who was doing cool things. And we noticed them because they were doing an Alexa meetup, an Alexa dev meetup, and just happened to notice it. And so I was like, oh, hey, these guys are in Pittsburgh. But generally from like a more cultural perspective of Pittsburgh, having lived there and in the city, I'm originally from a suburb of Pittsburgh, but I lived in the city while I was working there. I know that, you know, every time I go out with friends and experience the culture there, like there's so many more new restaurants and things to do and see and events. And just generally what I've noticed is that there's more young people there. So there's more people who are staying there after college because there's some pretty big and notable universities that exist in Pittsburgh. And a lot of what had been happening before was that a lot of people would get jobs in the Bay Area or even in Austin. A lot of companies would get funding, even if they started originally in Pittsburgh or started out of CMU and were concentrated in Pittsburgh while they were there in college, the funding would move them away. So it would move them out of the city. And so I think that there's more young people that are staying there after college. There's more talent, just right. tech talent that is staying there. And I think as the funding kind of grows and moves to focus on funding technology companies, then that helps to keep companies there as well. So it's certainly growing, and it's a lot bigger than when I left there 4 years ago. And there's a lot more companies that are doing great things out of Pittsburgh. And I think that also even as we move towards like a more remote culture where you don't necessarily have to be in the same town as your advisors or board members, and that there's less of a focus on that, I think there's less interest of companies or venture capitalists to actually move companies into different markets. And I certainly understand that there's a lot of other different things, considerations that go into that, like the talent pool and other but even just having a distributed team is now much more common and almost seen as a strategic advantage, saying that we have people that are in different cities and you can actually tap into talent pools of multiple places rather than a single location.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like I used to live in San Francisco and I just got tired of dealing with San Francisco rent. So I just like, in theory, I can work anywhere I want. So go by. And that was like, you know, that was still the beginning of the .com first wave too. So, but now it's amazing. People just, it's like lifestyle choices. People just, just working wherever they wanted. It's actually lifestyle choices. We're like, I have a friends who just, month to month, they're just working someplace different around the world. And only coming home for like the holidays or something like that, you know, just kind of doing things. So it's kind of crazy. So
that's a dream adventure that I have as well.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh, yeah. It's pretty cool. They have it down to a science now. So it's pretty cool. And actually one of them has a new startup where they help other companies, like if you have like a dozen people or something like that in your company, you want them to work remotely for a week or two, so they'll help you coordinate everything. It's for you because they have experience now. So cool. Yeah. So Pittsburgh's great because we know Bearded Studios. Matt Griffin did the movie. What comes next to the future? Or what comes next to the future? And then we have Brad Frost is there. You have Then you have Val Head up there. So just lots of great companies. And then my brother's favorite Pittsburgh Pirates are there, which is not my favorite, but anyway.
It's so interesting that it's his favorite because I feel like probably haven't been doing a great job of being a good baseball team for while he's enjoyed them, perhaps. I don't know. I feel like the last time they were good was when I was like 6 years old. So
yeah,
it's, or like super good, but I think they've gotten better recently.
Yeah, they've gotten better. Also, my Reds have decided to stink, so it's been pretty terrible. So, but I digress. So, let's talk about you went from graphic design and now we're doing product design, which is web design. Product design, which I guess, web apps, is that another name for product design? Is that fair?
Yeah. Okay. So web apps, and I think I've also worked in native mobile apps, Android and iOS.
Okay. So product design can encompass like native apps. And I just, I'm kind of like, my brain sometimes, to be totally honest, is just like, we went from designing websites and then all of a sudden became product design. And I'm like, I have no idea what product design is. So just like,
oh yeah. The titles consistently change.
Yeah. And I feel like
every couple of years, there's a new way to define yourself as a designer, depending on how the technology has changed. Yeah. And it can be a little maddening because I still don't, there's still like people who say they're UX designers versus interactions. Like there's so many different nuances and there's like a million Medium articles about the nuances in each one of them.
Yeah. I have no idea what UX design is, but that's like the coolest title lately that I found. So I'm going to like just grab that one because I feel like it's the coolest one.
Yes, exactly.
And also I still have Thought Leader. I'm just going to use it just because I'm leading by thoughts. That's what I'm doing. Because I tell my brain to do something. My brain tells my body to do something. I'm leading by thoughts, guys.
Exactly.
So we're going back to graphic design, product designer, web apps, native apps. And now we're at the BOT conference that was here in Austin, Texas. Mm-hmm. The first BOT conference in Austin, Texas that I know of, anyway. And it was all done. It was awesome. Microsoft was there. Slack was there. Just a whole bunch of great companies were there. And so the app that you were talking about, and I don't know if you talked about it or not, if you were there talking about it, but the app that I saw was for an add-on. I'm not sure if you want to explain it, but it was for this app called Burner, which generates fake phone numbers. Mm-hmm. And the app, and I hope this is right, this is like generates a temporary phone number. And then the app is on top of this phone number you give to someone would actually, like, if someone tries to meet you in a bar or whatever like that, and you don't really want to talk to them ever again, it just generates a fake conversation with them and totally just ghosts them, I guess.
Yes.
And it's actually called Ghost. Is that what it is?
It's called Ghostbot. Yeah. Ghostbot. Right. So you got that right. It's a bot that was built for the Burner platform, and they do provide you temporary and disposable phone numbers. So a lot of people... Actually, a lot of their user base, and specifically women in their user base, though men and women both use it for online dating, we found that there was like a higher rate of women who wanted some level of privacy while they were dating. And so what Burner is pretty, I actually didn't know about it when I was dating online. And I like, of course I find it and I'm like, oh gosh, I wish I had this. Like just the Burner app, because it does, like, there's some weird thing about giving your physical phone number out or having to actually, be tied to something that you might have to block eventually. And I have friends, then I discovered that I had friends who are single and were dating online. They were like, oh yeah, I use that. And I was like, oh, weird. Like I didn't realize. But So it's used, and they use it specifically for online dating. Right. And so a lot of their users use it for online dating, and it's just an extra privacy layer. So you don't have to give out your physical phone number. Their app is really cool. Like, you can burn your phone number, and so you get rid of it. And so it's no longer attached to your account. So if someone tries to text it, those texts won't get channeled to your account. And then you can generate a new one. So you can start giving out a different phone number, to people. And so we decided to build GhostBot, and really, like, as we were, it was an idea born out of a hackathon, an internal hackathon that Burner had held. And it was one of their designers who wrote a script just envisioning, like, what type of interaction it could be that has a ghosting bot. And there, you know, even combating, like, inappropriate pictures that are sent just unsolicited, which I had never really experienced. And I hadn't really experienced a majority of, like, the extremes that were happening while I was online dating personally. So it was, for all of us, it was really interesting. First of all, like, their designer kind of painted this picture of, like, what could be in this ghosting bot. And then we were tasked with kind of building the bot that would live up to this, you know, this kind of, this scenario. And so we dove in and, like, started investigating, like, what was actually happening in online dating, because, like, I personally had an experience, someone sending me an unsolicited, inappropriate photo of themselves, and hadn't really just, like, known about the culture. So I asked, you know, of course we ask our friends who are single and are online dating. And then we also, like, dug through these online communities. Instagram, there's several Instagram accounts, and I think they're all centered around Instagram. By Felipe is one of them, and Tinder Nightmares. That's just to name a couple. And once you start diving into those online communities, you kind of realize how prevalent the issue is of little, like, and these are conversations that aren't just happening via text. They're conversations that are happening in, like, the Tinder app or in the OkCupid app. And they're conversations that, like, are just, like, harassment. You know, they end up being harassment, and there's, like, crazy amounts of it. And as I started, like, asking specific questions to some of the people that we knew that were online dating, like, have you ever experienced something like that? Like, everyone was like, oh, yeah. And then as I was thinking back to my experience in online dating, I was like, oh yeah, I certainly received inappropriate messages. Like, I never engaged with the person who sent those, and I had never gone on dates with them, but I certainly had experienced them, at least initially. And so we kind of focused. So there we built the bot to focus on specifically on communication like that. And especially communication that was really aggressive. So the scenario that we were kind of optimizing for was, someone who went on a date with maybe one or two times with another person, and they weren't interested any longer. So, or maybe that person had just been inappropriate, or they just knew that it wasn't someone that they were ever going to want to be with. And so they turned, or maybe they started texting them and were inappropriate. And so they just turned them on to turn on GhostBot. So now when this person texts them, that person will receive a response. And the natural language understanding model that we built was built to actually try to find certain responses, like insults and bragging and negging and mansplaining. And, you know, there were, like, several things that we were specifically focusing on this, like, aggressive idea. We never actually built in, like, the image recognition of blocking inappropriate images.
Right.
That's maybe a next generation and a little bit more of a harder technology problem to solve. But we basically were like, you know, the emotional baggage of having to experience messages like this in real life is, and what you see on these online communities is that there's, like, a can't win situation. If you try to be diplomatic and just say, or, like, just straightforward and, like, say, hey, I'm not interested. Or if you try to, just be kind of passive and respond slightly, like, then kind of more abuse comes almost in a lot of situations, it will come no matter what.
Right.
And so instead of having to say like, oh, I need to like look at this and worry about this emotionally, I'm just going to like turn it on to something else, and you'll still be getting responses, but I don't have to actually see or think about any of those responses. And then eventually like the responses are kind of, set at different intervals. So it's supposed to kind of mimic norming like a random texting behavior. And then if anything gets, you know, way aggressive or vulgar, we actually just block the user. And so we do like a normal, just like, we're blocking you and you can't, you can't any longer, like, you're not getting any notifications or seeing any amount of the conversation, and that person has been.
So there's an endpoint, like is there like, there's several vectors that you explained that was going on. Like you have, the vectors being put nicely, but like things women have to deal with, right? Like mansplaining, negging and all that stuff like that. So there's several things of speech patterns that you researched in terms to, not combat, but to, I guess combat would be a way to say it, but to respond appropriately. Yeah. Right. And then does that, you know, is there a natural endpoint that you, like a funnel to an endpoint that you have like for ghosting, or is it just like only if someone says like it's very vulgar, is there like a quick endpoint like I'm blocking you or something like that? Because I'm just curious, because like if you are I guess my question is like, how long do you keep them on the string until you just cut it off?
Yeah, exactly. We had talked about that. We weren't totally sure what to expect. I think our initial idea was that like, surely people will get the hint if you're continually avoiding, and like they'll just stop texting, because inevitably that's what you're doing when you're ghosting anyway, is that you're kind of either non-committal or you're just like not talking to them, and then like eventually they just stop trying. And that's the way to like not deal with, or to deal with not dealing with someone else, and their need to get in touch with you. And we're still within like kind of the initial design. We haven't made any major updates to GhostBot. But we thought like, okay, people are going to get the hint. And that was our like hypothesis going into it. And we really had no idea what to expect. And it seems like there, a lot of people are, from what we see, like on behavior, is a lot of people are getting the hint and just stopping communication. But there are people who are still like on the string, so to speak. And it, to them, it just seems confusing, or it actually seems rude. Like GhostBot is actually being the rude person in that scenario. And like, it's certainly not intended to just create like more emotional baggage for other people. Like that was something we were trying to avoid. And I think as we update, we're going to consider like just ending, you know, like it kind of having like a spike where it just kind of will engage in conversation and then eventually stop responding altogether, and kind of increasing the interval at which the responses even happen, so that like it seems less and less interested. And those were like decisions that we made both because we didn't have great data or information to back up like exactly what behavior would need which what like solution, and then also just from a technical perspective, it was like, this is an MVP product, we're just gonna put it out there and see what happens for some of those decisions. So we have several things that we want to iterate upon as we move forward and make GhostBot less, a little bit smarter about how it handles those situations.
Okay. So, yeah. And so you said like, it was like a hackathon, you put this together, right? So it's just not like,
well, the original idea was born out of a hackathon. But no, we built this over, it was pretty fast. It like majority of the build took about 4 weeks.
Okay.
And so it was something that we were getting out pretty quickly.
Okay, cool. Awesome. Okay. And by MVP, you mean most minimum viable product, right? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yes.
Cool. I don't feel like MVP, like most valuable product or something. I don't know. Are there plans to go back and do a 2.0, or is it just it's working and you don't need to go back?
There's no plan set. We have some other projects that we're working on with Burner. So we have like kind of shifted some focus and are currently in stream on some other things. And we are doing some general like bug fixes and other things like that. And we want to propose to like go back and do some of these little tweaks and basically just go in and estimate like, you know, kind of what the effort will be to get these kind of optimizations in. So it's certainly on our plate, but you know, it's always a conversation to be had as like, how many users do we have? Like how much are we continuing to market it and support it? And what is the general strategic game plan for GoSpot generally? Is not like, it hasn't been a conversation that we've had.
Right. Have you been getting feedback from people who are using it and, or have data about its effectiveness?
Yeah, we have some data, but it's kind of difficult because the end user, like the, our actual like burner users, their data is going to be much different than the person who's actually on the other side of the conversation. So we certainly have been tracking several things and look and monitor like it, the amount of conversations it's having, what it's saying, what it responds to. And we had been doing some training previously, like we trained it a bunch after it was released to kind of help optimize the natural language understanding and based on actual use of the bot. But we haven't done any like specific interviews with burner users about their experience with it. Okay. Our hope is that for them, it's like they set it and kind of forget it.
Right.
Yeah. Like they don't really have to worry about it after that point.
Right. Exactly. And so that's pretty awesome. Like I feel like just want to see if that's the actual, you know, they're happy with it.
Yeah, so in terms big issues have come up.
Yeah. Yeah. So not some weird Westworld issue or something like that where something goes crazy.
GoSpot has spawned and is like making its own decisions.
Yeah,
That'd be pretty hilarious, but no. Yeah.
it's like all of a sudden, instead of like getting rid of someone, it just makes a date for you. You're like, oh my gosh. No.
Yes. Yeah. It actually agrees to a thing.
That'd be terrible. Yeah. So, but yeah, I think this is just such a great idea. I mean, it's a cultural sensitive issue, solves a great problem, and it's just a great use of technology. I thought like it was just like it checks a lot of check marks in my mind about like technology and solutions and cutting edge and stuff like that. So I felt like just it was a really great job. I just like wanted to follow up and learn more about that. So it was really great. Thanks, sir.
Awesome. Thanks.
Yeah. I think it's just, it's phenomenal. Thanks.
Yeah. I mean, it really got us interested in what like the idea of like a personal bot is. And like at TalkAbot, I don't know if you've heard some of the other discussions around personal bots and people were talking about bots that like embody you and represent you and like kind of are your digital agent.
Like an avatar out there.
Yeah, exactly. And when I was giving my presentation, I did talk about GoSpot, but I also talked about like the idea of how it fits into this idea of personal bots and how you can hire bots to do very specific tasks for you. And like, that's kind of what I envision, but like a lot of bots being really valuable in the consumer space is what specific tasks are bots well built for and how does that help humans in their day-to-day struggles and what will humans hire bots to do as consumers. And so like there's tons of great applications in the enterprise space and so we thought this was a really interesting opportunity to take a look at like what specific tasks might a human want to automate and how can we do that. And obviously there's so many when you look at that, and a lot of them are really difficult problems to solve, but this one came up and it was solving like a real issue, and it was also very like, yeah, it was kind of exactly in the right like space of culturally it's talking about a thing that ghosting is a new way of interaction that I think people that are, you know, maybe millennials and older and probably the lower end of millennials are a little bit more cool with ghosting. Like it's no big deal. It's just like, yeah, it's whatever. Like there's so many people I talk to and there's so many dates you can get on Tinder. Like, yes, I may have met that person, but like, it's a throwaway relationship. And like, I think that that's happening a lot more. And so people aren't ghosting is just an idea of like a cultural thing and in the way that we communicate, I think was a great way that it coincided with the idea of bots and the way bots are kind of revolutionizing the way we communicate as well, or at least will be. Maybe not for the average consumer right now. Do they think that bots are revolutionizing their communication? But I think maybe in 5 years, that will be the thing that people are kind of reflecting back on and saying, like, in the same way that we reflect back on Facebook, or at least I reflect back on Facebook and remember when they introduced the newsfeed, that people in the future will be like, oh, I remember the first bot I ever hired to do a job for me and or hired to manage my communication. Right. So,
right. Are there any bots or ideas that from the Talkabot conference that you thought was like really awesome or hit the home run or something like that? Or sorry for the sports metaphor, but
yeah. No, that's cool. So I think that we heard about like a lot of interesting bots. The Ola bot, which was a bot that Esther Crawford had was talking about, was her idea is like a bot as a personal kind of a personal embodiment of you, but the way in which that they were going about building that in like a very gamified quiz, like kind of have my bot interact with someone else's bot in order to gain knowledge about each other and really being like a fun medium for people to play with. And so I don't think that they've actually released it as a product yet, or if it has, that may be somewhat recent, but they're actually, you know, building these bots that are just fun ways to kind of upload information about yourself to it. And then it can start to engage with other people and other bots to the point where it's like, hey, like Lauren, answer this quiz. And she's going to send it out to her friends. And so they're going to see how that matches up. And the bot's going to manage all of that process, which sounds super cool. And just seems like maybe not as interesting. And I think it's just an interesting way that like we could build a whole separate social network like inside of messaging where it like bots are actually doing a lot of the like heavy lifting with communication and you're kind of responding and reacting to things. So I thought that was really interesting. And one of the bots that I actually mentioned during my talk that I thought was a really great example of personal bots was the Do Not Pay bot. And that bot is helping people like get out of parking tickets.
Oh, really?
So it's just in the UK, and I think they did New York City as well. But basically, like, there's all these different regulations and bureaucracy around even just parking tickets. And like, if you parked at a place and you thought that it was okay and it had this type of signage, because signage gets so out of date within a city structure, you can actually just get out of a parking ticket if you fall within like a certain flow chart of a decision tree of, you know, scenario. Okay. And so this guy actually automated that process for people with parking tickets, and it just helped people get out of their parking tickets through a bot. And they're actually doing that for a lot of other like bureaucratic processes in, I think, mostly in Europe, but like you could imagine every local and state jurisdiction could benefit from a streamlining of process of like, hey, do I qualify for food stamps? And I think even the way that like healthcare.gov has started to do things like very like small questions when they're intaking you, like I see a lot of just web trends that are moving people to a much single task, like answer a single question and get feedback about it. But if you can also do that through SMS, so someone doesn't even need to have a browser to be able to accomplish that, that would be that much more powerful to reach a greater, like, you know, a greater amount of the audience, and especially the audience that you might want to be targeting, ones that may not have a personal computer and might not even have a smartphone. Though that there is pretty high coverage of smartphones, but I think bots can hit a wider range of people. And then there's like the Abe was a personal finance bot that was there at Talkabout. And I've seen actually a lot of personal finance bots happen as consumer bots. And so a lot of what they do is just like automatically analyze your spending and give you information about it. Like, hey, this is how much money you were spending on gas this month. Yeah. And this, it was this much higher or lower than the previous month. And you may say like, oh, weird. Like I maybe have relied on my car a little bit too much. I want to change my behavior. Or like, oh yeah, I had to do, I took a road trip. So yeah, of course, like this was a, you know, a out of scale month. So it's kind of elevating pieces of your behavior back to you through just passive monitoring of your various credit cards and bank accounts, which I think is kind of like the next evolution of what maybe what now seems stale in like mint.com. Like that kind of almost seems like a stale site in some ways, like at least maybe my opinion. I don't know, a lot of people probably use it. but that like now you have to do less work. You don't even have to log in. I'm just going to get a push notification to me and it's going to tell me exactly when I did a thing that it seems out of the ordinary.
All right. Well, see, that's, I feel bad now. Like I feel old because like websites are now stale. So that's right.
Yeah, I mean, completely biased. I think that there's still a ton of, you know, there's still a lot of like in the task of personal finances, there's still a lot of aspects of that that are, that is like a spatial task.
Yeah.
Like you physically need to see maybe a spreadsheet and like that's the type of view that you need because you're doing a spatial thing in planning. Mm. And so I don't think that bots replace websites completely because websites give us like an incredible spatial like canvas to work with. And bots, what they do are very timely and can be very personalized and have a very goal-oriented perspective. Right. Like, whereas the big kind of spatial idea of a website to me is very wide open and unconstrained. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of tasks, that's what you need. And for a lot of other things, I think we're finding that bots might actually be a better delivery mechanism than a website that sends you emails every week that you ignore. And somehow being like, can we get people to not ignore, you know, the bot messaging them? So yeah, there's different modes. And I think bots are just now a brand new mode for us to interact with.
Yeah, I definitely think that there's like a, you know, websites growing from like, what you say, like, I guess, marketing communication websites to, you know, apps now for websites. And now we have, you know, bots either in a Slack channel or like Alexa or even text bots, right? You know, SMS bots or whatever like that, that there's just going to be another a tool in the toolbox to target and market to, you know, to consumers and to our customers, where that, you know, I feel in some ways in the future, websites will probably go back to being more brochureware and earning trust than, and saying like, oh, I could install this Alexa app about whale watching, but it could just be a phishing site. Let me go check it up and look it up on the website, make sure it's, you know, at least looks legit before I install it and some of that too. So, you know, even though it's got like 4 or 5 out of 5 stars on Amazon, but that's kind of where I feel like that's going. So I think there's a lot of ingenuity, a lot of creativity happening with bots. And I feel like just trying to understand the problems that are being solved by bots is really, you know, try to what I get to talk about it was like, what problems are you solving? What new problems are solving? And I think like, you know, the ghost, you know, bot is like definitely like, you know, it's a cultural solution out there that, you know, that a website's not going to fix whatsoever. Right.
Right.
Yeah. So definitely. So pretty good. But yeah. And then, but I felt bad. I don't want this, you know, it was a great conference, but the bot that I couldn't, they had a coffee bar at the conference.
Yeah.
And that they had a bot in order to order coffee. You had to use a bot, which, I mean, you didn't have to, but like, and I said, great. And the only thing I could not order through this bot because it's predetermined menu was a black coffee. And I was just like, what? I just, okay, fine. But, so.
Yeah, exactly. I think the coffee bar, it was an interesting bot and it worked well. Like it certainly showed you how like ordering food can be streamlined, like not having to talk to human beings. I guess it's like an introvert's dream of like, okay, I don't actually have to like go up and talk to a person, which to some people is like, that's what's ruining society. But to some people it's like, you know, why do I have to have this like fake conversation and interaction with someone, even though like it's not necessarily going to go further. I think the particular application of it there wasn't like totally fit for everyone.
Yeah.
I think because the coffee bar was just an espresso machine, and so they didn't even have coffee there. So they couldn't offer it. They were like, we're not even brewing drip coffee. Which to me is like, oh, okay, you understand that when you walk into like an espresso bar, but you don't necessarily expect that with like a coffee. Like, I don't know. Yeah. I think it's partly marketing and messaging maybe that didn't set the proper expectation.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. But everything else was great.
It was such a fun conference and it was cool. It was like great. Like the guys who at Howdy who put it on mm-hmm. really want to focus on Austin being a hotspot for bots and like just conversational interfaces. And they had a meetup earlier this week on Monday.
Oh,
it was
nice.
Like first actual meetup that they did. And they're going to be doing a monthly thing. But the presenter at the meetup was the CEO of Message.io, who was another presenter at Talkabot.
Mm-hmm.
And he's building, they're building a translational layer between Slack bots and everything else on like the enterprise side of bots.
Oh, nice.
He says that he actually cited that like Austin has more venture backed bot companies per capita than any other city. And so they, you know, they're really interested in, which is really exciting. And it's like a fun thing to know and to also get behind like, oh, okay, Austin can actually be the bot capital. And, you know, I think selfishly, like you want it to be there again, back to the idea of like a localized community versus a distributed community. It's still fun to have these things happening in the town you live in
mm-hmm.
and being able to go to physical meetups and have real human interaction.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause, my story is I used to live in Cincinnati, Ohio and, go Reds,
another Rust Belt.
Yeah. Another Rust Belt. And it's pretty much a Procter & Gamble, P&G. They wanted a lot of Flash developers and designers back in the day, right? And so I was at I didn't know, there was nothing for me to go to in terms of web standards or web building websites and stuff like that too. So I actually go to Dayton, Ohio to go to meetups and stuff like that too. So, and that's like an hour drive for people who don't know. It's just like, just go to a meetup and meet people who build websites and some of that too. So, and then I moved to Austin, Texas, and it's just like, it's crazy how awesome it is.
There was three different meetups happening at Capital Factory that night. And so it's just like this community, I mean, just generally the technology community is on fire. Like you can find any specific meetup that you want, which is awesome and can be kind of maddening too when you're like, I don't know, like as a designer, I'm like, I don't know, I want to go to the mobile meetup and the web meetup and
crazy. So Lauren, it's been great talking to you today. Thank you so much for your time. How can people find you on the internet?
So my company is called Voxable and we're at voxable.io and we build conversational interfaces for other companies and products. So if anybody has a need, they can certainly hit us up. I'm on Twitter at Lauren Gollum. And that's just G-O-L-E-M, the first part of my last name. And that's my handle almost everywhere. So any other sites and places, but I would say Twitter. Voxable's Twitter is at Voxable, V-O-X-A-B-L-E. And then also I'll be hanging out at meetups. We're going out at Austin Web Bash and as well as the Talkabot meetup that happened, that I'm sure they'll be doing one in December. And I think there's several Slack groups that is a fun new way to interact. So You can try to find me on direct messages. I'm usually Lauren Gollum on Slack channels too. Okay.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thanks so much.
Awesome. Thank you.